A very warm welcome to the SaaS Business Podcast, specifically for those who run dynamic businesses, are SaaS pension trustees, and have decided to take full control of their personal wealth economy. In the podcast, I share with you how you can understand the power of this high-performance combination of business, SaaS, and wealth generation to create the power, freedom, and choice in your life and creating your multi-generational legacy. I am so passionate about business and SaaS pensions that I wrote a number one Amazon bestseller on the subject, SaaS Pensions, Creating Extraordinary Levels of Compounding Wealth. To find out more about how SaaS can be a game changer in your personal economy, join thousands of SaaS trustees on our Facebook group, SaaS Alliance, and join us at www.saasalliance.org. Now let's get on with the podcast. Well, a very warm welcome to this episode of SaaS Business Podcast, and I'm delighted to invite Lars Singleton to this episode. Now, Lars is Managing Director of Empowered Pensions. He's an independent financial advisor in his own right. He's got well over 20 years experience working with high net worth individuals. And very personally for me, he's actually our SaaS corporate trustee. So let's get on with the episode, and a very warm welcome, Lars.
Good morning, Mark. How are you doing this morning?
I'm very well indeed, and thank you for sparing the time out of your busy schedule to join us on the SaaS Business Podcast.
Pleasure. Excellent.
So we obviously know each other really well, and you're our SaaS corporate trustee, and I'm sure we can dive into that a little bit later on. But for those who may not know you as well as I do, could you just introduce yourself, a bit of your background, who you are and what you do?
So I'm a co-founder of Empowered Pensions, and Empowered Pensions is a scheme administrator. We help people set up these occupational pension schemes that we know of as SaaSs, and then we help them run them in a compliant manner sort of going forward so that they can become the decision maker but not necessarily the expert in pensions. And so that's essentially what Empowered Pensions does. And obviously I have corporate trustee responsibilities, so I sit on all the boards, try and keep people along the straight and narrow, but also at the same time try and help them achieve their objectives, both from a pensions perspective and also from their sort of business growth perspective as well, because this is one of the few pensions where you can actually make those two sort of conjoin. I mean, that's the Empowered family, and I've been a financial advisor for 20 odd years, starting with Scottish Widows, who are still around, but they're one of the very few that are. Married, I have two children, I have a beagle, which means pretty much I have three children. And that's sort of me in a nutshell, really.
Brilliant. So we've obviously been in financial services for a long time, and SaaS has been around a long time, but maybe the momentum that we've seen over the recent years of interest and awareness on small self-administered pensions, when did you first become aware of SaaS? And maybe just give us a bit of history of some of your experiences over the years.
So you've got to take yourself back to 1991. I'm a junior advisor with Scottish Widows at the time in the City branch. And at that time, you know, they wouldn't let anybody out unless they'd actually passed all the internal exams. So I was sort of sitting there trying to study for these exams. And they had this technical library in the office. And it's a little bit like Hogwarts library in the restricted zone. So, you know, you would go in there and you pick out these sort of old dusty tomes about sort of pensions from the 1970s and that sort of thing. And I came across this thing from Technical Connections, which was about pensions and taxation. And I sort of started reading this thing. I came across, you know, the things that you could do with self-administered pensions. And, you know, it's like, oh my God, you know, this is awesome. I always had an interest in business, and it just seemed to just tick a button. And, you know, I've always loved learning about these things. So, I mean, the history of SaaSs goes back to the 1970s, and it was the very first form of self-administered scheme. But it's something that sort of waxed and waned and then waxed again over the years, because you had self-invested pensions that became, you know, the flavor of the month, and everybody said, well, that's how you do it. But these things have been sort of slowly chugging along in the background. And then, you know, in the last few years, they've become that much more useful for people who are entrepreneurial, running their own business, that sort of thing. Not to say that SIPs are not, it's just that this is, you know, a slightly different beast. So it's just one of those sort of very long history things that's just stayed with me all through my life.
Yeah. And I mean, we set up our SaaS pension in 2015, and
And as you may recall, we did the takeover, didn't we? So we transitioned from our previous corporate trustee to yourselves. So I remember when we originally set up the SaaS, I mean, it took 7, 8, 9 months with HMRC. It was a long, hard process. And how, as a corporate trustee, how are you seeing the process of setting up a SaaS? Is it becoming easier? Is it becoming more regulated?
It's gone through sort of various different phases. If you go back, it's probably about sort of 4 or 5 years now, you could literally go on to the HMRC website. You could sort of put a few bits of information, hit the button, and you got your tax registration number straight back out again. It was almost like, you know, you just go in and set it up, you know, drop of a hat sort of thing. Now, regrettably, there are bad people in, you know, in the investment world, and they have targeted pensions like this to commit liberation fraud. So Revenue did the right thing by actually closing down that sort of ease of access. And they went through a sort of a due diligence process, but they weren't set up for that sort of thing. So it used to take months to get your scheme through. Now, they've also been developing their systems, and now we see SaaSes go through in 20, 30 days from registration. There's still quite a lot of information that gets sent to them. You are making an application. They do background checks on you. They do background checks on us all the time. So, I mean, anybody setting one up, you know, should know that that's going on in the background, and the people that eventually get these things set up are, you know, fully approved. So it's a process that I think will become more regulated, and I welcome that. I think the quicker that we squeeze those bad folk out of the investment industry, I think the better. I would welcome more regulation, but it's regulation really that needs to be intelligent. You end up, or you could technically end up, killing the benefits of this thing by over-regulating, but I think it does need a little bit more thought.
So the setup process of HMRC, are there some various themes that they're picking up on now? I know you've mentioned payroll to me a few times, and the trading history of sponsoring companies.
Yeah, I mean, it's part of the regulatory process that you would only want to set up a pension scheme for an operational company. Regrettably, some folk have set up SaaSes for companies that were literally just bought off the shelf, and have never traded and probably never will trade. And it's seen by Revenue that that's an inappropriate usage of an occupational pension scheme. You know, you have to put yourself in the shoes of HMRC, who are granting all of these tax benefits of it, and they want to make sure that it's being used appropriately. So, you know, they look for trading history, they look for measures of legitimacy, such as a payroll, such as VAT registration. And in fact, the law in terms of the rights to transfer pensions from one to another is very much linked with the status of the individual, whether they're receiving salary from a particular employer, and therefore creating this occupational pension arrangement. And if those things are not there, quite reasonably, it's a flag. You know, it's almost impossible to prevent liberation fraud completely, but these are the mechanisms that they go to try and uncover what might be. And I welcome that, you know, this is being done both by HMRC and also by seeding schemes, the ones that are transferring the money in. It's a good progression.
And it's more thorough, but also taking less time. And that, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 weeks seems an awful lot more appealing.
Yeah. I mean, the actual setting up of a pension scheme is reasonably straightforward. You can hear my beagle in the background.
Mm-hmm. Making himself known.
And the second part of that, probably the more frustrating part of it, because you've already got your scheme, the second more frustrating part is when you actually start to move your pensions from, you know, where they are at the moment into your new SaaS. You just want to get on with it. The actual process of getting that transferred through is probably the more frustrating part of it. And it's actually the more difficult part, because the party who's transferring the money in, they're charged with Revenue for ensuring that liberation fraud doesn't happen. And, you know, they don't know what's going to happen once it actually gets into the SaaS. So they look to make sure that as best they can, they've ticked the appropriate sort of measures to counter that risk. But, you know, there are still things that we can do as a company, and we're going to be evolving the transfer process over the next sort of 3 to 6 months so that it radically improves that transfer time.
One of the frequent questions we get asked through SaaS Alliance is recommending IFAs and the defined benefit transfer process. any observations on how the market's moving and getting sign-off and the appropriateness?
Some of the big draw towards SaaS is that you can look at your occupational pension scheme, your defined benefit, your final salary pension, and you look at it and say, well, you know, it's really, you know, really valuable. It's a, you know, significant amount of money in transfer value. There's also a very significant benefit in terms of the guarantees that it has. And the transfer process is regulated by the FCA, and the FCA have got this particular view, and I would agree with it. A few circumstances in which the ordinary person is best served by a transfer of a final salary. Now, that's not to say that it shouldn't happen. It's just that, you know, Joe Average will be giving up something that is guaranteed, and they don't have to ever worry about investments, and they would be moving into something which is, you know, naturally risky. So, you know, that's the position of the regulator. The regulator sets the framework for financial advisors and have required that you take financial advice if these benefits are worth more than 30,000. So, you know, you've got a financial advisor who, on the one hand, has got the FCA saying there are very, very few circumstances in which you can say it's right to transfer. You're already setting yourself toe-to-toe with the regulator if you choose to go that route. Now, there's a sort of an unpleasant part to financial services, which is there's a lot of ambulance chasing in terms of compensation for misadvice and that sort of thing. And any financial advisor who is saying, yes, it's right to transfer, is really putting themselves in a difficult position because you've got a regulator saying it's unlikely to be appropriate. You've got a claims industry saying, you know, have you been misadvised? You've got professional indemnity insurers who are picking up the price of this, and the cost of insurance is literally driving advisors out of the market, and saying, look, I don't want to play in this thing. I know I'm going to be shouted at. I know I'm going to be targeted. I know that, you know, I'm going to have to defend this thing. And there's no limitation on liabilities. You know, with most professions, it might be 7 years, but with a pension transfer, it might be 20, 30, 40 years, and they can still come back to poke holes in the advice that was given. And very few times there's a sort of a true appreciation of the thought process that was going on at that time. So it's a difficult one. I imagine that final salary advisors are going to become rarer, and therefore the cost is going to be, you know, I think it's going to go up. It's down to the scarcity of the resource.
And those willing to put their PI on the line to provide that support.
Yeah.
So you have an incredibly valuable lens to look through the pension market, but, you know, specifically the SaaS market. So the role you operate for us in our SaaS as a corporate trustee, that to many is viewed probably as a little bit of a black art. Could you maybe simplify some of the complexity and share with our audience what a corporate trustee actually does? What are their duties and how they can interact most effectively with their corporate trustee?
If you start from the position of what are the trustees' responsibilities, they are to deliver this money to the pensioners at the time that the pensioners want to start take their benefits. So as in a SaaS, all the members are trustees, but they may not necessarily be, you know, 100% au fait with all the different investment types. They certainly won't be au fait with all of the HMRC rules and regulations. So it's the job of the corporate trustee to set out the framework within which the trustees can make their different sort of skill sets known. So most of the clients with Empower Pensions, it's, you know, high 90% sort of thing, will be either professional investors or moving into that professional investment space. So what we do is we tend to say, look, you're the experts in your particular field. You find the investments and you look at them from the point of view of whether they give, you know, the right level of reward for the right level of risk. Our role as the corporate trustee, we will sit back and we will tell you, firstly, whether those things are likely to go wrong and give you the framework for the sort of due diligence that you might want to apply. But really, our responsibilities will be limited to saying to you whether this is going to cause you a tax problem, a problem with HMRC, because HMRC have a very significant way of actually persuading you not to do things they don't like by, you know, taxing you, and it's a very significant penalty. So it's a delicate balancing act between the role to identify and do due diligence on the investments and the due diligence that you need to do from the sort of the pension rule side of things. And, you know, we try to gently nudge people back onto what we would consider to be the path. But the idea of empowered pensions is that you take that responsibility along with and the control and the general joy of actually controlling your own destiny. Mm. And there's very few that do that. So it's a challenge.
I think it's a great example of freedom. You know, the essence of freedom is the ability to have your own choices. But as you say, there are rules, and there are rules in any part of society, so I don't fear that. But you know, I think it's incumbent on people. It is a highly accountable position to be, isn't it, as a SAS trustee, without necessarily scaring people, but you know, people need to be eyes wide open. Could you just high level let us know what the penalties are?
Sure. So let's say that you do something which is deemed to be an unauthorized payment. Depending on who gets the benefit of that unauthorized payment, the revenue would look at that situation and they would send a tax bill to that particular party who's benefited. So if, for example, you've made a loan back and you haven't secured the loan as a first ranking charge on the appropriate valued asset, they would then send you a bill for at least a charge of 55% of the infraction. And it can go higher than 55%. Yeah. So the company will one day will get its post through the door, get a letter from HMRC saying you might owe several hundred thousand pounds, depending on the size of the loan back, that sort of thing.
That could be to the company then, the sponsoring company?
That would be to the company.
Could that also be, in certain cases, to the SAS itself?
There's a breakdown between the SAS itself and the company. So there are certain sort of parts of it that definitely fall into the hands of the infractious party, so the company in this particular instance, and some that would actually apply to the scheme. So you're getting not only the pain of your company being charged, but your pension scheme, the residual part of your pension scheme, is also getting charged. And you know, this is almost a sort of the opportunity for a perfect storm. If you then use that loan and it hasn't gone the way that you wanted to, you know, it hasn't made you that value that you were hoping for, you might then also have the failure of the investment, the tax charge, the pension charge. It's just, you know, it's just a horrible outcome.
So I guess it's a bit like managing risk, isn't it? It's probability versus severity. So we've seen the severity can be quite high. But in terms of probability, you see the very, very occasional one in the press, but how often are penalties levied in your experience over the years?
We as Empowered Pensions have had two instances where we've had to advise HMRC of situations that cause and will cause and have resulted in tax charges. And we've got 522 schemes, and we're probably looking after 300 million or so of other people's money. So, you know, from an Empowered Pensions point of view, we don't see it very often. And the two instances were when the party that was borrowing, the sponsoring employer that was borrowing the money, actually then defaulted. They deliberately took the left-hand turn where they should have taken the right-hand turn. So, you know, they knew it was going to come. In the nicest possible way, they buried their heads in the sand and they wouldn't engage with us to actually resolve the problem. Revenue don't want to charge this tax. It's a penalty. They'd much prefer that the situation were resolved. And if people work with us, you know, in those situations that would cause penalties, if they work with us, then normally you can actually have a conversation with the central compliance people and say, look, this is the situation. This is what happened. This is what has been done to rectify the position. What do you want to do? And most of the time, you're talking to, you know, one of the guys up there. We know them, you know, reasonably well because we talk to them on occasions when we have difficult problems. And generally, they want to, you know, they want everything to go back to how it should have been. And the last thing they want to do is to potentially kill a company in order to teach the trustees a lesson. So, I mean, you sort of make out what you want of that, really. But, you know, it's a nice relationship to have with HMRC. And I think really what they're trying to do is just to make sure everybody does, you know, play the right game.
All the more reason to have good, solid education. And that's that continuous professional development as a trustee that is so critical, isn't it?
Yeah, I wanted to get the Spider-Man quote in there somewhere along the line. But with this great power comes the responsibility, and the responsibility is about your competence level. As a trustee, you're obligated to act in a prudent, commercial, secure manner. Well, you can't do that unless you have the competency in the areas that you're investing in, or in the processes. If you're not competent in an area, it's not about the embarrassment of saying, look, I need help. It's about getting the right resources in. If you don't want to, upskill, you have to get the other parties in. You have to get a financial advisor or a lawyer or a wealth manager or something like that in. But, the idea of being in control of your own destiny is to have this knowledge. And so invest. That's really is the name of the game.
Yeah. And with all your trustees and the management there, you must have seen... You talked about how wide open the remit is for us as investors, as trustees. You must have seen a whole myriad of investment opportunities. I mean, we work very closely together in property, but could you just give our audience some idea of the length and breadth of investment potential you've seen?
I don't really want to focus on the horror stories, but there've been a couple of those where we've gently had to say to people, look, is that really the best use of your money? Do you truly understand what you're getting into? And, most of the time people go, yeah, okay, no, fair enough. But the joy factor is that there isn't really any start or stop. It's about, acting in that prudent, commercial, secure manner. So we've seen people who have taken disused and really derelict buildings, mostly the sort of the commercial office or manufacturing business, and turn them into beautiful places, whether it's a conversion to residential, whether it's conversion to serviced offices. It's about taking something which is pretty awful and turning it into something which creates value for everybody. The sponsoring employer gets something out of it, the pension gets something out of it. So those are the sort of the fairly beautiful, simple things. But we've also had people who wanted to invest in derivatives, so derivative traders, or effectively day trading on contracts for differences, puts on sort of traditional and traded options, futures, always interesting. When you're playing with something where you end up buying 50,000 barrels of oil, where on earth would you keep it? Sort of thing. We've had people who wanted to do joint ventures, want to set up, we've had AI companies where you actually buy into the company, which is creating an AI tool, with various different AI tools, one for stock trading, one for marketing. And those are exceptional. Some of these companies, they go from worth pennies to being worth millions of pounds. And you look at that and go, well, almost in one go, the pension scheme has taken something very, very simple, applied a very little, sort of amount of risk capital to it, and ended up with life-changing value add. It's exceptional. It's wonderful to see it when it goes right.
Yeah, and that's one of the lesser-known investment asset classes you can invest in a business. And do you see that increasing with that knowledge, more and more people investing in businesses?
Yes. Again, it's probably a function of our client base, but most of our people are property related. But the intelligence of our clients tends to come out, and they tend to look at the things and say, okay, well, if I've got 80% of my wealth committed in property in some way, maybe I should be looking to diversify into other things. So then they start learning about businesses, the operational side of businesses, and they're now sort of a growing number of people who are involved in looking for and doing due diligence on these private companies. And sometimes you can buy them out, or buy out companies, or you can buy into companies with very little in the way of risk capital. And it is a growing thing. And I think it's partly because of the nature of the maturing of the property market.
When somebody's investing in business, and I'm thinking SaaS, I'm thinking pensions, I'm thinking maybe multi-generational legacy and long-term investing, property tends to be a shorter term for maybe some developments, but the longer term hold, and then investing in businesses. How far reaching, what's the longevity of some of the investments you're seeing? Are they into 5, 10, 20, 30 years?
The short answer is yes. The slightly longer answer is it depends on the the foresight of the individuals. You know, to really to frame this, this pension that you start today has got a normal life expectancy of 125 years. So you're talking many generations, and you know, a significant number of generations. So what you're doing today, if you create wealth, and because of the rules on inheritance of these pension funds, it means that, you know, generation two could be taken care of, generation three, four, maybe generation five. So it's about setting yourself up to create this capital, to create the flow of income to you, so that when you need to use this thing, it's actually doing the right job, creating income for you, where you don't actually have to give away the whole of the capital in order to generate that income, which is the annuity option. Sometimes they're useful, but most of the time our clients are looking for assets that are effectively payrolling their pension. So a lot of people tend to be involved in sort of capital appreciation to start off with. And then as they get into the phase where they're looking at their retirement, they tend to move into assets such as commercial property. You know, just it's really, well, I suppose commercial property, fixed interest, lending, those sorts of things, in order to generate that income flow. It's what people are interested in, and you know, where they are in their life, really, that sort of dictates that.
Yeah, and I guess where a SAS sits in context with one's other wealth and occupations. Mm. One of the metrics that we have in our organisation is our return on time employed. So whether you're investing long term, you know, not requiring much of your time, frankly, whether you're very active, you've seen some of the developments that we've done in our SAS. They're very time intensive, but you work hard on the asset, and then the asset works hard for you for many years. But equally, just investing, it's just a few hours to maybe make that investment initially, and it can be a very, very light touch for many years, can't it?
Absolutely. How much time you actually put into your SAS will pretty much dictate what you get out of it. If you're using it as a funding vehicle for projects such as the ones that you've been doing, you know, you can create that wealth in the pension, and you can create sort of greater wealth outside of the pension in a very legitimate manner. So you have this wonderful situation where you're not asking permission of anybody. You're literally saying to yourself, do I want to fund this project? And then, you know, flipping the coin over and saying, well, what am I going to get out of it? You know, it's that sort of wonderful close relationship with financing and with business that, you know, actually is probably the thing that's missing in a lot of cases from normal, you know, UK business life. You know, we have this way, we're more akin to the way that sort of Germans approach their financing and the way Japanese have approached their financing for business. It's an easy win. Put money into this thing, get tax relief. The following day, you can use it to create more wealth. Round and round and round it goes.
That tax efficiency massively influences that compounding, doesn't it? And it's the Warren Buffett snowball effect, I guess.
Absolutely.
Incredible. So you've seen a lot of successes in terms of people investing their pensions. Could you share with us maybe some of your observations on the lessons learnt by people along the way? Maybe some positive, maybe some negative, but hey, they're all lessons, aren't they?
Yeah, that was in the sort of prep for this. You asked me about the lessons that have been learned, the challenges that have been there. And almost everything is either a success by chance, a success by planning, but the planning tends to be, you know, because you've had pain before, you got it wrong before. When it goes wrong, as long as you can walk away from it with, you know, something from it, even if it's just a lesson of it, it's a lesson worth having. If I can, I suppose the ones that I have made the biggest impact on me were the ones that I've got wrong. I invested in an unlisted company with a property developer who was going to take a, you know, very significant building, was going to turn it into some fairly, you know, smashing results sort of thing. We went through all of the paperwork, all of the paperwork was there, all the shareholder agreement, development management agreement, memorandum, the whole thing was there, and it all looked perfectly fine. I sat back, I concentrated on something else. All the other investors did exactly the same thing. The developer went off and did something completely different. And I, you know, came back to it a little while later, and it had all gone wrong. And we worked through effectively the company was insolvent. We had to close it down. We had to work with the administrators on how to execute our job properly as directors of that SPV. It's going to cost. It's definitely going to cost me the money I put into it. And it might cost other people who lent to it on an unsecured manner, it might cost them some of their money as well. So the lesson here is the one that we should all have in business, which is it's your capital, it's your responsibility. It's your responsibility to ensure that you understand what it is actually you're getting into rather than what was being sold to you. It's your responsibility to ensure that you get the paperwork right. Nobody likes paperwork, but the paperwork is only there for when it goes wrong. It's like a fantastic quote that someone gave me only a couple of days ago. They said, everybody was happy in Jaws until the shark turned up. And it's like, yeah, that does figure. When paperwork's not there, you've got nothing. So, that's the important part of it. And then once the paperwork's there, don't do what I did. Don't go off and, concentrate on something else. Keep an eye on what's going on with your investment, because people are people. Most developers are awesome. They do things that I could never do. They have skill sets I could never hope to have, and they give a great return to the people that work with them. But occasionally it doesn't work that way. And yeah, it's about spotting those before it happens.
And I think some of these skills are, and lessons learned, they're life skills, they're life lessons. They're not necessarily just typical for a SaaS trustee. I mean, great quality communication, active dialogue, great due diligence. I mean, these are the rigors of being in business, eh?
Absolutely. I actually couldn't have put it better. Part of the job is about doing the thing, and the other, perhaps even the majority part of the job, is about telling people what you're doing, how you're doing it. And I put my hand up. There have been occasions where Empower Pensions hasn't been as good as we want it to be. And actually, that is the 2020 project. Over this next couple of quarters, what we intend to do is basically sit back, look at everything, every process that we have, and re-engineer it from the position of what is it that the customer, what is it that the member trustee wants to get out of this thing? What comfort level do we need to provide them with? And, that applies to our business. It's not necessarily a pension thing, as you say.
I absolutely love what you've just said there, because I think one of the greatest strengths in business is humility. If we ever lose humility, we gain complacency. And that humility means you care. And I know you care. We talk very actively and regularly about our SaaS. And when you're involved in business or a trust or whatever it may be, you can anticipate there's going to be some choppy water along the way. I mean, we all accept that.
Yep.
So I think it's a great lesson for us all to remain humble, continue to evolve, and be able to make tomorrow better than today and today better than yesterday.
Yeah, absolutely. I received some feedback from some clients a few months ago, and they said, look, you don't have a consumer group feedback mechanism. I said, I don't particularly want that, but I sort of gradually walked myself round to that acceptance of that. And we started a group, and we picked folk who were, sort of fairly forward with their views about, what we had done wrong in the past. And it's really uncomfortable, from the position where, that you and the people that work with you care very passionately about delivering the right result, but then hearing it from the other side and you go, okay, it's not about what I feel, it's about what they feel and what they've experienced. And maybe they were operating with only a proportion of the knowledge that they should have had, but then it was our job to give them all of the information so that they could actually see the wider picture of it. But at the same time, maybe we haven't done it well. There are situations where we say that, it should happen this way, and it doesn't, it happens that way. I think it's the point that has been the biggest sort of quantum shift in my thinking over this last 12, 24 months. It's okay. It's I wouldn't say easy, but it's straightforward to grow something that people want. It's more difficult to make it fun, make it a pleasure to work with. That's the problem of small companies growing fast. You're scrabbling around trying to make things, sort of just keep everything sort of going in the right direction, balancing your revenue with your requirements, your resource costs and your OPEX, that sort of thing. And then at the same time, trying to keep, people making the right decisions in the right way and making it fun as well.
The demographic of SaaS trustees, they're people who have taken that conscious decision to step out of traditional environment, to embrace change, put themselves into a, you know, out of their comfort zone. Just by the HMRC requirements, you know, they've been involved in business, they've got a track record, and they understand the maybe the challenges of growth and scaling. So, you know, I think it's there's a whole wealth of knowledge there in trustees, isn't there?
Yes, we definitely have a broad spectrum of knowledge, both of their pension abilities and also about their business knowledge. And a lot of people who are fairly new to business, they want to take control, they want to be empowered. Actually, that what they're doing is they're taking themselves out of a support mechanism. Neither you nor I, when we started our businesses, may have had people to support us in that same way. And I think the challenge is about giving people enough support that they make good quality decisions, and at the same time keeping it at a cost where, you know, people are seeing the value in it. And that's one of the bigger challenges.
And I think anybody who's listened to this podcast will have got enormous value from, you know, what is, you know, many, many years of experience in this market. And I'm certainly hugely appreciative of the support you give us with our SaaS. I'm sure there'll be many, many questions. We can only cover so much on a single episode of the podcast. Maybe there'll be a version two of this if you'd be amenable to that in the future. But if people want to get involved with SaaS and maybe ask you a few questions, how would they best get in contact with you?
Best way to get in contact with me is by email or WhatsApp or by Facebook Messenger. So I'm regularly on sort of Facebook. I contribute to the SaaS Alliance question and answers on occasions. My email address is larssingleton@empoweredpensions.co.uk. Always happy to have a chat with people. You know, there is a sort of capture mechanism to make sure that people who inquire do get picked up, and, you know, we are learning from past mistakes. So if people want to know more, just reach out.
Brilliant. Well, I'll put those links in the show notes on this episode. Lars, as ever, been an absolute mine of information. Thank you so much for your time. Really looking forward to growing our SaaS and helping SaaS Alliance to support, you know, many people with along with Empowered Pensions. So thank you very much indeed, Lars.
Mark, thank you very much. And listeners, also, thank you very much for your help and trust.
Are you inspired and want to know more? Well, join our Facebook group, SaaS Alliance, and check out my number one Amazon best-selling book, SaaS Pensions, Creating Extraordinary Levels of Compounding Wealth. You can also check out SaaS Alliance website at www.saasalliance.org. Until next time, thank you for listening.